Before anything, when it comes to how you're going to be consistent with a plan, and even when you're thinking about it from the perspective of one email at a time, you really need to think about what emotion do you want people to feel when they're reading your emails. In other words, what's your one goal for that particular email? It could be story-based, it could be a relatability. There's all it may be engagement. What is the feeling that you want them to feel? And I think that's super important. Sometimes it's FOMO, fear of missing out. There's a lot of connection when it comes to how you write your email. So thinking about it from that perspective, and don't get wrapped up in it if you don't know yet, because I think as we work our way through today, some of this is going to become clearer. And honestly, the more you do it, the more you will cement this thought. Every time you get ready to write an email, you'll be like, okay, what's my one person need? What do I want them to get out of this? And that may take a little bit of practice. So don't get hung up on it because honestly, more than likely, the first couple of times you do this, it's not going to be amazing. You're going to get better with practice, is my point. I look back on some of my earlier emails and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm embarrassed that I even sent that out. I can't believe I sent that out. So again, know that this is a process and you'll evolve. But the key to it is consistency and doing it over and over repetitiously. Okay, keeping in mind that there's two core goals, in my opinion, at a minimum that you need to start with. The number one goal is to build real connection with your subscribers, that your people that raise their hand and say yes to your list. And I think that's why the relatability piece and stories and all of those types of things have to come into play. And ultimately, the next piece of this is you want to be their go-to source or their guide so that when you do ask for a sale, they have a know, like, and trust factor with you. So going back to even one which is understanding that you're trying to build a relationship with these people and you want them to feel like that the value that they get from your emails is real value, and they look forward to getting your emails. And I think that's the key to all of this. And there's I mentioned this to you guys before, where we've been really leveraging the power of Donald Miller's Story Brand book to do our rebrand. And it's honestly, what he teaches is so valuable in so many contexts. And I think it's absolutely valuable even in the context of email, when it comes to coming alongside your person and letting them know that you can be the leader that they're looking for, and what kind of content and or emails can you share that is going to present yourself in that light. The more value you give and the more you present yourself as that resource for them, when you actually put yourself out there and say, hey, I've got something that's value-based to your person, but there is a price tag on it, they're already going to be so far down the road of the know, like, and trust factor is what I call it. They're going to be like, this person has been giving me so much value that I know they can help me and I'm willing to spend money with them. So that needs to be a part of your mentality when it comes to how you present yourself in your emails, your weekly emails. Okay, so let's talk about formatting your newsletter. And there's a couple of different variations. And honestly, I think these are kind of the three that, as I was trying to pull the context together of, how can you format your emails? A lot of email service providers will have templates, and you don't necessarily have to use a template. You can do a simple text. Now, simple text is just that. There's no bells and whistles. It's just, black text usually, and it's got some formatting, meaning that you've got paragraphs and, bold perhaps, but it's just simple text. It's not images. It's not a template. It's just that. And you see a lot of people use just simple text. Well, I won't say a lot of people. I definitely, well, I would say it's maybe 50% of the emails I get are just simple text. And then The second option when it comes to formatting your newsletter is text with an image or two. Again, it's not necessarily a template. It's just using templates and using your email service provider to insert a couple of images. That jazzes it up a little bit and, you know, gives your reader some imagery to, you know, to highlight certain things. Maybe if you're, you know, wanting to show, I've seen a lot of people do, and we've done them too, but like even GIFs, you know, where you're putting GIFs in there to make your email pop a little bit. So I think that is smart because again, the visual components are, I think, really easy for people to consume. People's eyes are drawn to it, that kind of thing. And then the last is more of a template based. It's a, you know, a designed email header with images. We primarily use the last version where we do like with our blog posts, for example, we usually have an image that is a banner, essentially a newsletter banner. And then, you know, we have the text and maybe some interspersed images. But for some, you may not have the resources to do all of the bells and whistles. So there's really no wrong way to do this, in my opinion. I think it's just the consistency of it is the key. For me, I do like things to look good. And I do find when I'm looking at emails that my eyes are drawn to the visual elements before I read the text. Now, whether or not that's true for you guys or even with your readers, but I normally do incorporate a few images in my emails just for, you know, for that visual component that I think a lot of people are drawn more to the visual images than they are to the text. The other thing that a lot of people are doing, and I definitely encourage you to do it because I haven't seen any studies on this yet, but a lot of people are now using emojis inside of their emails. And we haven't done a ton of that yet, but I'm just betting based off of what we know about emojis in other places. Emojis absolutely do increase your visibility on social. For example, people do consume that content more. So it would stand to reason that that would be the case in emails as well. So that's a thought. I wanted to throw that out there. You know, if you're going to use text with, instead of maybe using an image or maybe you can still use an image or two, but use, you know, a series of emojis in strategic places. I think that would also attract people's attention and draw their eyes to things that you're wanting to really key in on. Again, just personal preference, I think, on that. But if, you know, if you want to take the time and you know, it's really fairly easy to do, you know, just copying and pasting an emoji. If you can find an emoji to like emoji tool, like I think Emojipedia or something like that, where you just copy it and paste it into your email service provider or wherever you're composing your email. Thought I'd throw the emoji thing into the mix. One of the things that I get asked quite frequently is when do you send your email newsletter? You know, if you're going to do a weekly email, what day and to what time should you send it? The short answer is I think everybody needs to test this. You know, I think that when it comes to your audience, you should, you need to get to know when your people are most likely to consume your content. So I would spend the first month or so sending your emails at a variety of different times and days. And then I would compare your data to, you know, across the board and see what that looks like. Did you get more opens at this time in the morning or that time in the afternoon? Or did this day outperform another day? For years, I have sent my newsletter, my blog notice, you know, newsletter out on Monday mornings at 5:30. I mean, I've just for years done that. The reason I started doing that is because I had a mentor one time that said that that was the best time to send emails. So I got in a habit of doing that because somebody had told me that, you know, that's what I needed to do. And of course, my community has gotten used to that time block and and we've continued to leverage it. But if we don't have a blog that's being published on a Monday, we've also sent it on Thursdays or different days. But we usually do go after that early time block. But let's say, for example, and I think we talked about this once before, where, you know, if you know your audience is moms, for example, and, you know, they're super busy, maybe they're up and about early and they're, you know, maybe they get up a little early before they get the kids up and they check their email and that kind of stuff. Maybe early in the morning is a great time, but likewise, they could be just like scrambling in the mornings, you know, trying to get the kids to school and that kind of stuff. And they don't have an opportunity to check their email until later in the evening. So it just depends, you know, getting to know your community and your people. Ultimately, you can even ask at some point, you know, when do you check your email? You know, what does that look like for you? But testing is the key to this. I really feel when it comes to your specific audience, your community, what makes the most sense for you. So test always. You'll find your sweet spot. If you want to start with, you know, Mondays at 5:30, you know, and then again, go for a period of a month to 6 weeks, testing different times and different dates would be my suggestion for you. And then compare the data points and see what happens. And then go from there. The key to all of this, though, is consistency. So how in the world do you stay consistent? Obviously, the plan is a huge piece of it, but I think it's a little bigger than just that. So when I say that, I really feel like when it comes down to it, doing a time block, I'm a big fan of time blocking. So what I mean by time blocking is picking a specific time of day, maybe even a day of the week or a day of the month, and blocking out a period of time during whatever day of the month that you pick. And based off of the plan you put together for your year, knock out all four of your emails in that block of time, and then go ahead and load them into your email service provider and schedule them as broadcast emails. And literally, you know, in a small block of time, you've knocked out your entire month of emails. You've checked that box, as we say. Otherwise, what'll happen is kind of the story that I shared with you guys yesterday. When it came when I used to try to do my blog consistently, you know, it was every Sunday. I was, you know, up against it. What am I going to write about? And, you know, getting it written and published and all the imagery done and all that stuff, so that I could get it out the door by 5 a.m. the next day. It was, you know, it was life sucking. That's the best way I can say it. It was life sucking. And I did that for years. So, you know, when you can just breathe a sigh of relief after, you know, having a plan, and two, time blocking and just getting it done, not like trying to do it, you know, literally the day before your time that you're supposed to send it out. Right. So just set aside a time, pick one day, one morning out of the month, and then write all four of your emails based off of your plan, because you're going to know what your plan is soon. Okay. Now, that doesn't mean your plan can't deviate from, or what you decide to send can't deviate from your plan. It also doesn't mean that you can't send additional emails that are not a part of your plan, like promotional emails, for example. So like we do send my blog, when we have a new blog, we send that out, but we also have a promotional schedule, right? So, and those emails go out, is separate from, they're not a part of the overall, what I call more of a relational value-based part of your newsletter plan. So the newsletter plan that we're going to talk about and put into place today is all about the consistent connection and value that you're giving to your community. The promotional piece of it will be woven in based off of what you have to sell. Okay. So these are kind of two different things. And like I say, you can definitely send additional emails. You're not locked into just one email a week, but you do need to send one email a week that's value-based and can really provide that consistent relationship building opportunity with your list. So what do you send every week? I've put together something for you guys. Hang on just a second. Let me pull it up here. Let me get it pulled up. And so over here, And okay, so I put together an entire year's worth of what I call relationship building email broadcast ideas, right? Just they're kind of like sparks to get you moving, you know, get your creative juices moving. And it's broke down by quarters. So the first quarter is here's January, February, and March. So what are your goals like, you know, for this quarter or for this month? Maybe it's, again, just to build those relationships out. Maybe you're trying to position something that you have for free to give, again, give more value, hopefully get them to share it into their communities. There's a lot of different things that you could leverage from a goal standing perspective. And then I just gave you, you know, what I call, you know, conversation starters. Maybe you want to write an email the first week of January that's all about your goals, your New Year's goals for obviously in this case, if we were just starting in January 2021, it would be, you know, what are your New Year's goals? And you could make that based off of your business, your niche. There's a lot of different angles that you could take from that perspective. You know, there's, you know, what is the big strategy, the big picture strategy you use and or teach, three actionable tips, share a tool you love. Regardless, I mean, you can see there's all kinds of like little conversation starters, I call them, or things that you could talk about. Now, you can also weave in, and I've done this for a couple of like April, for example, of the second quarter, you know, April Fool's Week, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. So maybe you share an example of that, right? And that could be business related or it could be personal. There's a common theme across all these conversation starters or maybe creative starters. Maybe that's a better way of saying it. And that is that they're story-based. You're wanting your community to connect with you. And it doesn't always have to be about, you know, obviously about you. You could tell somebody else's story as well. You know, surveying your people, like what do they care about? What do they want? That's another option for you. The blank that changed my life, a step-by-step guide too. Point of it is like even this one, particular one, the good news when it comes to putting some of this stuff together is that you could also be creating another freebie simultaneously. So like a step-by-step guide to whatever, right? That technically could also be a freebie that you could set up depending on how your existing audience reacts to it. If they really love whatever you put together, then you could, you know, beef that up and turn it into a freebie as well. So there's a lot of really great ideas here for you guys. And again, you don't have to use these. I literally pull these together. And, but I think there's a lot of value, especially if you don't already have a blog and you're starting from a place of just wanting to connect to your people, give value to them. This will be a great way to jumpstart your relationships with your list. So like I say, I've filled out an entire year's worth of ideas for you. And then I've also provided a blank calendar for you. So if you love these ideas up here, or you don't like some of them, you could literally just fill in your entire calendar with whatever makes the most sense for you. The point of it is, and really what I want you guys to focus on the rest of today and tomorrow is filling this out, getting this to a place where you feel comfortable with it. And you could have an entire year's worth of emails planned so that you know what your email is going to be each and every week. And that's the goal here. End goal is getting a year's worth of stuff. And in this case, since we're already into July, you'd be starting, you know, on the third quarter. And you can always come back, but my suggestion would be fill it out. Even though obviously we're already in the third quarter, you know, get all this stuff, pull it out of your head, get it on a piece of paper, because then you have a plan. You can always come back, circle the wagon. And if, you know, you wanted to, as you get better at this and you start to see common themes or you feel like your audience needs something different, you can always, you know, white it out if you want, I'll use that term, and come up with a different topic for that week. But the key to this is getting a plan together so that you have some idea what you want your weekly email to be about. And then pick that day and time of the month that you're going to write the four emails and just get it done. You know, these don't have to be massive emails, by the way, guys. You know, remember that most people's time is limited and the time that they spend with us needs, you know, is value-based. So how can you share something that's, you know, based off of your, you know, whatever your plan is, that doesn't take up, you know, tons of time. So, all right. So I'm hoping that this will really be helpful for you guys. I spent quite a bit of time putting this one together because I know that based off of my own experience, that this is where a lot of us fall down. Definitely where I've fallen down over the years, because I didn't have a plan. And it just makes things so much easier. But there's two things I want you to commit to here. One, getting a plan together, and two, using time blocking to actually knock it out. These are critical pieces. If you don't create the plan and you don't time block to make sure that you get your emails written, then, you know, the plan doesn't really help you. Or if you want peace in your life, you'll go ahead and use the time blocking method so that you don't have the scenario like I've talked about where the day before you're supposed to send an email, you're trying to figure out what you're going to do, right? And other things are competing against that time. When you block that time off and you just focus on that, life becomes so much more magical. It really does. But until you do it, and it may be tough initially, I'm not going to lie. It may be like pulling, you know, a splinter out of your finger. It's like, ow, this is painful. You know, how do I, you know, block this time? How do I, you know, really focus in, key in, and, you know, just get this stuff done. But you'll get into a habit. And, you know, it goes back to breaking bad habits are, you know, it's just repetition. So you have to commit to the time and you have to commit to the plan in order for this to work. All right. So I know we've got quite a few questions, so I'm just going to pull these up. So Vicky says, if you're just starting out, should your first email say something to that effect or just jump in and make it sound like you've been doing these emails all along? Yes, you should not. In my opinion, you just want to own where you don't have to say I'm a newbie. Like, I've never sent an email before in my life. I hope you get this. No, just jump in and act like you know what you're doing. Because you're building the know, like, and trust factor. Going back to what I said before, my first few emails was, you know, now that I know what I know, looking back on them, I'm like, man, those were terrible. But most people don't know that, you know, they don't have that. They just don't, you know, I didn't get a bunch of unsubscribes off of the first two or three emails I sent. Right. So we're very critical of ourselves, but step into it, act like you know what you're doing, and then grow in that knowledge as you get better and better at it. But now that said, if somebody, you know, calls you on it, well, I apologize, or whatever however you want to word it. You know, this is, I'm just getting started with my email marketing, you know, but that's not going to happen. But if somebody does call you on it, yeah, absolutely own that you're just getting started. You know, most people have empathy is the word I'm looking for people who are doing stuff, regardless of their level of expertise. It's like sometimes, I don't know if you guys have ever seen this, but you see somebody, you know, jogging down the street, jogging being a generous term, you know, they're barely moving, you know, and I'm like, you go, guy or gal, because they're doing it. You know, somebody that's like a super buff person, I've been with people before, and they'll see somebody like that and they'll kind of make fun. Right. And I'm like, no, they're doing it. You go. So most people, I think, really have a lot of empathy for those that are, you know, doing the work. Regardless of whether or not it's perfect or not. So don't get hung up on your what you view as your imperfections, because one, most people don't see them. And even if they do, they have, they're okay with, you know, you not being perfect. In fact, I think a lot of people prefer that we aren't perfect. So writing, Stu says, writing an email is like writing a short punchy message to your favorite uncle or friend. Yes, I do agree with that. In fact, Stu, when you are sitting down to write your emails, if you think about your one person, if you've named them, you know, whatever you named your person, your avatar, and I do recommend that you do that. And even if you can, you know, cut a picture out of a magazine, or, you know, find a picture online that looks like your person, put that person on your screen somewhere, or do a cutout and, you know, set them in front of you like you're just talking to them. It's absolutely a great way to feel a sense of connection with your person when you can visualize them. I know it sounds ridiculous, but it works. And when you do that, all of your your readers are going to feel that sense of connection, because it's like, they're just talking to me. Like, I've had so many people tell me that over the years. It's like, you're just talking to me. It's like, you know who I am, and it's just kind of a weird dynamic how it happens, but it does happen. So print the person off, or, you know, pull them up, call them out by name. Think of them when you're writing your email. Maybe you don't have to worry about printing them off, you know, putting them in front of you. But if you do need that visual stimulation to feel like you have a connection with your person, use it. Absolutely use that. Thank you, Vicki. Yes, I tell you, absolutely. You guys, I've told people all along, I'll be running right alongside you, cheering you on. My hope is that you just pass me up. That's really my hope, is that, you know, you just keep running faster than I can. And, you know, that means that somewhere you'll be pulling somebody along with you. So what you learn here, I hope you pass on. Kim says, ask. I heard once that simple text, like a personal email, gets better reading response. Kim, I have heard that, but I haven't seen any numbers to back it up. You know, I've noticed that some of the big marketers will use just straight up text. And now I'm noticing, for years I noticed that, where they would just use straight text, I always pay attention to the top marketers, because I want to see what they're doing. Because if they're doing certain things, it means it's working for them. But I've noticed a lot of interspersion of other things over the last year or so. The emojis, the imagery, you know, things of that nature, just being more direct instead of playing the games that have traditionally gone into email marketing. So I don't really think that it's tested. That's my best message to you, really, is test and see what kind of gets you the most engagement. I think for my community, it goes back to imagery, you know, people process visual components way faster than they do text. So I always like to intersperse a little bit. But again, I don't think that there's one way to do it. Figure out what works best for you and is maybe arguably even easiest for you, because when we do all the imagery, you know, creating the banners for the top and all that, that's additional time and resources. You may not have that. And if that's you, then that's okay. You know, it's totally okay. Just use straight up text. The key to it is do it and do it consistently. And if you want to test it to see, you know, if one gets more engagement over the other, then do that. I think through the course of the testing and or making the choice, which one you want to go with of the three options I gave you, you will find that you'll do one of the three over the course of a period. You know, you'll say, okay, this is my sweet spot. And, you know, if it's all text, it'll be all text. You know, for me, we use a combination of two and three, which is some interspersion of imagery. Great question, though. Lisa, amen. It has been one of the biggest difference makers for me. And it's something I've really only embraced the last couple of years. You know, I used to think that the fact that I could multitask was a good thing. I was like, yeah, I can multitask like a beast. I'm there. But I have found that when I really focus in on the one thing gets done to a much higher level, than if I'm trying to do multiple things. And, you know, I've gotten to the end of my day and I'm like, what have I done? I've been busy all day, but I've got nothing to the finish line. But when you time block, you do get stuff done. You know, you can mark those things off your list because you're focused in that moment. So if you're not using time blocking, highly encourage it. So Sue says, I have loaded up 14 emails into ActiveCampaign. Yes. Is it appropriate to send those out on consecutive days? Most of the emails have soft sales at the end of them and the keto niche. I wouldn't send daily, especially if you're asking for a sale every day. That sounds a little bit sleazy, Sue. And I don't mean that nasty, so don't take it nasty. But think about it. If you're just starting your email marketing and you're getting pitched every day, that doesn't always come across well with people. What I would suggest is that you intersperse those with some other value adds. And when you are thinking about email marketing, my suggestion is that you don't necessarily want to email people every day because they'll start to tune you out. You want people to look forward to your emails, like they're getting something valuable. Now, that said, there are situations where an email every day is warranted. Like if you're doing a promotional email series where you're selling a course or something specific where you're doing, like I say, a promotion, you definitely would probably want to email every day. If you are doing a challenge, for example, and it's over the course of 5 days, then you're going to want to email every day, right? So there are situations where the daily email matters and is appropriate. But from a planning perspective, it's going to be very hard to keep up a daily email plan. So come up with a weekly one email a week plan first, and then intersperse your promotional emails in amongst that would be my suggestion. Great question too. So Kim says, one coach said not to ask for a buy until someone has been on your list and nurtured for at least 3 months. I think it depends, Kim. How did people come on your list? You know, that would be one caveat. Like, for example, if somebody buys from you and they bought your mini offer, for example, you are building a list of buyers at that point. And when you're building a list of buyers, they've already spent money with you once. Present, and if they got great value from you, waiting 3 months to ask for another sale is probably shooting yourself in the foot. Because they're anxious for the next thing. And if you're not presenting the next thing to them, then, you know, they'll find another resource for that. But if somebody is, just come on your list through a freebie, what is that going to look like? Again, people are searching for specific solutions to their issues, right? Their problems. And if they come onto your list for something specific, and you're continuing to nurture that by giving them value-added content, waiting 3 months to ask for a sale can sometimes be, again, shooting yourself in the foot because they're actively searching at that, you know, they got your freebie. I will say that one of the things I do in my freebies, and I should have mentioned this before. I'm sorry if I didn't. Maybe I have. But one of the things I do in my freebies is I upsell in my freebie. So if you download any of my freebies, most all of them have the next thing in my freebie. So, and very similar to what I do with my, the three places in my, my blog that I shared with you guys, I normally do that in my freebie as well. So if I have, you know, the 27, social media post ideas, for example, there's an upsell in that to a mini course. If I have people's interest in that moment and they're looking for a solution, I don't wait to present them with one that might potentially get them to spend money with me. Now, does that sound okay to you guys? That's going to be a personal decision on your part. I just feel like waiting 3 months to ask for a sale is probably waiting too long. It's my personal opinion. Marbeth says, in a nurture sequence for new peeps, would you email 3 times the first week? Absolutely. Yes, Marbeth. In fact, what I would suggest is maybe every other day, you know, during that first week. Now, you can spread it out differently if you want to. You can even have more than 3 emails if you want. You know, some people do, 5 emails or 7 emails, and then they just spread them out over the course of however long, you know, based off of the amount of emails they have. I think 3 is a good number, but I have seen some that are really well done that are longer. My hope was to get you guys with your first nurture sequence. And because most marketers don't have a nurture sequence. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's one of the things we're redoing mine now since we're moving into active campaign. We're circling back to it, freshening it up and, you know, getting it back into place. So when you have this, you'll have something that 90% of people don't. So again, knowing that you have it and then you can always, you know, freshen it up later, make it longer. Change it out. You can always do that, but getting it done out the gate is the important part. Okay. Vicky says, I just looked through my emails from the top marketers and every single email has an ask in them. Sign up, listen to my podcast, check my, yes. So that goes back to, it depends. I think there's a missing element right now in email marketing, and that is the opportunity to really connect with your community. The people that I think are doing really good with email marketing are usually people who have smaller lists and who get their person. And they're talking with their person on a relatable level. So that's one of the reasons that I created the broadcast plan in the way that I did, because those topics are relationship building style topics. And that is definitely something that I feel is needed right now. I think when we act like everybody else and we do exactly what everybody else is doing, without really connecting with our people, then I think that gives us an opportunity to shine that others don't have. That said, I do think the calls to action are important. So if you have, like, if you're doing one of the things I do, let me back up for a second. One of the things I do with my blog is I'll send, you know, my goal is to give value, but I'm also driving traffic to my website, right? You may be doing exactly the same thing. For example, if you've got one of the topics here, let's see, one of the topics, big news and you're hearing it here first. We'll just I'll pull a couple of these out and use them in the context of a call to action. So big news and you're hearing it first. You could share the story, tell the news, whatever it is. And you could also have that as a blog post or a social media post even, where you're sharing that same news and you're driving them to a Facebook page where they can become a fan, right? Or it could be a video where you talk this out, big news, and you're hearing it here first. You send an email and you drive them to a video that's on YouTube where you have an opportunity to get eyeballs on your video. So there's a lot of different ways that you can leverage this content with a direct call to action. I'll give you another example, a step-by-step guide too, right? That could be something that is very specific, but it could be where you're telling why you created this guide and you're sending them to a place where they can get it. So you can retarget those people when you do that, meaning when you get to a place where you're using Facebook ads, anybody that comes to your website can be retargeted with something you're selling on on Facebook if you're running ads to it. So my point is that calls to action can be woven in to pretty much any email sequence. Or any email broadcast. I do think you should try to decide what that looks like before you write your emails. Like, what can I drive traffic to? Or could I connect with people over on Instagram? Or one other idea, you know, that isn't necessarily an offer, but it, again, builds connection and relationships. I'd love to know, like, simple as this, you know, you send your email and at the end you say, I'd love to know what you thought about this. I send me a private DM on Instagram. And then you get people talking to you on social media. That's another option. I've done that a lot with my Facebook page where, you know, I'd love to know what you thought about this, you know, send me a message on Facebook or, you know, wherever. So letting people know the expectation and giving them an opportunity to connect with you on another level is smart. Not all of your emails have to be, where you're trying to do, you know, it's obvious that you're trying to drive, you know, people to do other things, but they won't do it if you don't solicit and use a call to action. So you do have to tell people what to do. It's, you can't just, assume that they get it and that they'll randomly, you know, follow through with something. Even if you hint at it, it's kind of a fascinating thing that you do have to tell people what to do. Okay, so Alita asks, how big should the email broadcast be? How many subjects on the email broadcast? There's no limit to how big your broadcasts need to be, in my opinion. I have seen one-liners. You know, in fact, a lot of people will use one-liners, what I call one-liners, when they're trying to re-engage people around something they've expressed an interest in. So let's say, you know, somebody has opted into my freebie around Facebook groups. In order to re-engage them around a Facebook group, I might send them an email and say, a few months back, you expressed an interest in Facebook groups. Are you still interested in Facebook groups? And how can I help you? I mean, that's kind of a two sentences, but I've seen them to where they're literally one sentence. Are you still interested in whatever? And let people respond to you. So it literally could be one or two sentences. There's no magic size. When it comes to email subject lines, you can split test subject lines, or you could do what I've shared, the strategy I shared with you before, where if you send out a broadcast and you know your open rate is whatever it is, but there's a bunch of people who didn't open it on day one, then day two, send out that broadcast again, same email, different subject line, and you will get more people to open your email. So you could do that. You know, technically you could do it for a series of a few days if you wanted to. In other words, every day you just send to people who haven't opened the previous emails. So that's what's so nice about using a service provider that actually allows for that. It does matter. Ask, is loading time affecting emails or is that false? Loading times. I don't think loading times are really a huge issue because people are not looking at their emails until they're loaded anyway. Like, right? I mean, they, you know, if they're downloading their emails from their service provider, they don't look at them, in other words, until they're actually loaded in. So I don't think that's an issue at all. So we get a question, please define newsletter. A newsletter is really any plan. It's a wide definition. some people would say that a newsletter is any email that you send to your subscribers. You've probably gone to people's website before and they have, hey, join my newsletter. I'm like, who wants to do that? Nobody. That's why it's so difficult. Unless you are a major brand, most people don't join to be on your newsletter subscriber list because they don't want to be inundated. They don't know what's in it for them. Approaching it from that perspective, I don't think is super smart. That said, when it comes to what I would traditionally call a newsletter, it's something that's value-based. I think it needs to be something that you plan consistently, which is why I've put this plan together for you guys. And hopefully there'll be enough bones there that you can really build it out and make it yours. And that's just, again, a consistent way to deliver content to your person. Christine is asking, does that second email with a different subject line just go to those who did not open it the first time? Yes, Christine. So you only want to send to people who didn't open it the first time, because they're going to get the same email and they're going to be like, well, I saw this yesterday. That's confusing, right? So you only want to make sure that if you're going to use that strategy, you only send it to people who didn't open that email on day one. Do you name your newsletter? I think you can if you want to, Maria. I know some people do. And then there's a new strategy. Well, it's not new. I mean, but I'm seeing more and more people do it. And we're actually considering doing it here, which is what I call a compilation email, where or a weekly email where you're just sending, you know, one email a week with a lot of value in it. I'm a little conflicted on it, frankly. So I'm like, do we do it? Do we not do it? I'll share my strategy that I've used for years is when I send out an email, my goal is to drive one action. And I'm afraid by using a compilation email that I will create, you know, when you give people a lot of choices, sometimes it's too much and they don't take any action. They're like, oh my gosh, this is overwhelming. Ugh. You know, I find myself doing that sometimes. So that's one of the reasons I've kind of resisted doing a compilation email, but we've definitely been, or a digest email, but we've definitely been considering it lately. And we may test it to see how it goes over. But yeah, you could absolutely name your email if you want to. The other value add too is, you know, leveraging your email to create opportunities to share things that you can generate revenue from, maybe that aren't even your things, you know, like, you know, maybe I'm going to suggest to my list a great tool, right? So that's an affiliate revenue opportunity. But beyond that, there's sponsored emails as well. You know, there's companies that will actually, you know, pay you to mention them in your emails. Now that's something that you'll probably want to work towards and potentially never do, depending on how, you know, how protective you are of your list. I'm very protective of my list. So I don't accept sponsored opportunities very often, and they're usually in conjunction with an influencer opportunity in some way. But I don't, you know, I don't sell out my list. Maybe that's the best way of saying it. I have to be very passionate about what I'm sharing with my list because I've worked hard to build their trust, and I don't want to just, you know, put anything in front of them. And like, quick example, we promoted this one tool and I thought it was a great tool in the moment, but as soon as we realized that they weren't taking care of my people, you know, their customer service was stinky. I pulled my endorsement. You know, I can't have that, you know? So you do need to protect the relationship you have with your list so that they do trust you, that you're not just, you know, landing in their inbox for your own personal gain. I don't currently have my newsletter named, Maria, and I don't know that I ever will, simply because, well, I've never thought of it, honestly, never really given it a whole lot of thought, but my list is pretty used to now getting my emails. And so, you know, I've got that consistency flow already happening. So yeah, I haven't named mine, but like I say, I think you could, just like we would name a show like Marketing That Grows Your Business Show or the Marketing That Grows Your Business Podcast or whatever, you know, there's, those are named entities and people identify content with those. So I think you could, if you wanted to. Yes, ActiveCampaign does allow you to send to people that didn't open. And it goes back to, I call it tagging, but whatever. I mean, you can use, I forget the term that ActiveCampaign calls it, but it's essentially when somebody clicks on, let me back up. You send an email and there's a link in there to something, right? Or maybe there's not, but let's just assume there's no links. Let's just keep it simple. You send an email and every time somebody opens that email, ActiveCampaign tracks that. So day two, you could go in and say, hey, ActiveCampaign, I'm going to copy and paste your original original email into a new broadcast. And you say to ActiveCampaign, hey, I want to send to everybody who didn't open the email yesterday. And you can do that. I agree, Mary. I open them and I'm like, okay, what do I look at first? So that's one of the reasons I've been a little reluctant to embrace the digest concept. Glad to get that feedback from you too, because I feel that way. Yes. I think that is a way for you and anybody who actually is building an email list to give additional value to your audience and still generate revenue from it, whether that's a tool that you love or if that is another relationship that you have where you're, coming alongside somebody and being a joint venture partner with them, forming a relationship with somebody who has a product or service that, your people need, but you don't have personally, you could recommend them essentially and get, an affiliate revenue share off of it. That I've done that, with a few people. I'm very selective. I don't do it a lot, but I've done it with my friend Shalene Johnson because she has a full on marketing, an online business, course, nuts to bolts. I don't have that. So if I have, somebody that's brand new in my community, that would be a great resource for them. Cause they could start on the ground floor and, build the core components of their business. So I don't have a robust academy like that. So I have no problems recommending that because it's a good course. And I know she loves her people up. So that's really key to me when I am, if I decide I'm going to come alongside somebody and recommend their service or their product or their tool, I have to make sure that they are aligned with me, that they're going to take care of my people. And I say that my people, I don't mean that in a possessive way, but I definitely want to make sure that if I recommend it to somebody that they, that they don't have a bad experience. It would be, not good. Lisa, I love that you say this. I love Shalene's recap emails, her weekly ones. She is probably the only one that I really enjoy her weekly emails. And the reason that I do is because they're just chock full of her personality. You never know what you're going to learn. You might learn how to buy pink boots or, fake eyelashes or I don't know, but she really makes them personal. There's always something personal and relatable, in her digest. So just, those examples I gave were just totally off the top of my head, but, she really does connect with her people in a personal way. And I would recommend that. I really would because it works. There are no silly questions, Christine, by the way. When I go into my email account, the address from whom the email came is on the right-hand side and the email itself is shown on the left. I can read the email without actually opening it. So I have seen it, but not opened it. How does this affect opening rates? Sorry if that is not expressed well. No, actually, I think I understand what you're saying. So there is there's two pieces of your email that I think are super important. Your subject line and what's called a preview of your email. And you can put whatever you want in your preview, which means that, let me just pull up something here. Let me pull up. Hang on just a minute. Okay. So let me share my screen with you guys. So if you'll see here, let me just enlarge this. Okay. Let's see. Let me not enlarge it that much because we can't see the So there's the subject line, right? Design pickle user guide. And then you have what's called the preview. Avoid costly revisions and time-sucking stress. Or, you know, get $5 off your next purchase of $10 or more. Or there's always that one person. There is a preview that can be put into your email service provider. And you can choose what that says. And my suggestion is that you do choose what that says, because that is a sneak peek to what's in the email, and it's a way to get it. It builds on the subject line. You know, if somebody's their attention's caught by the subject line and they read the preview, then they're more likely, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I need this. Let me click on and open this." Obviously, that's an example inside of Gmail. If you're using Outlook, for example, to your point, Christine, you can see sometimes more of the email than just that. Or to your point, you know, if you don't click on it, in some cases, you can see the entire email, depending on the length of it, without clicking and opening it. So, honestly, there's no way to control that because you don't know what people are using when it comes to their email service provider. So you don't know how it's showing up on their end with any degree of specificity. We do approach it from a Gmail perspective in that preview piece because we want to catch people's attention. So making sure that, you know, you have a solid headline and a good preview is also important. And they do affect Rhonda. Yeah, Rhonda's keying in here. They do. It does affect open rates. They do have to actually open the email in order to get to count. So Vicki, funny thing you say that. I actually learned how to do false lashes from Shalene, and it was hilarious. I was going back and listening and watching and trying. I had glue all over myself. I had never giggled so hard in my life. It was quite hilarious trying to put on my first set of eyelashes. I totally ruined them, and it took a while to figure out false eyelashes, but what I learned from her. It's funny you said that. Oh, good point. Rhonda makes another good point. Guys, if you don't put in your own preview text and choose that, you know, whatever language you want to use, it will automatically default to the first line of your email. So thanks for pointing that out. I totally tried the poached egg this week. Her video on that was hysterical. Yeah, she just makes me laugh. I mean, seriously, she does. But again, think about it from that context, guys. I've often said that in the social space, and that's one of the reasons I use a lot of what I call relatable content in social, because people are not interested in our products and services out the gate. And I'd like you to embrace that concept even in your email marketing. And that's one of the reasons I say, do some relatable content, show up in a relatable way, tell the stories, do the connection piece, because we're all talking about Shalene here and our various stories with her. We didn't really talk about anything that's value-based from her business necessarily, right? We're talking about things, eyelashes, poached eggs. I've got a great weight loss recipe that I learned from her. I don't know if it really makes me lose weight or not, but I learned it from her. I use it every morning. You know, it's just the things that you pick up in the connection that drives that relatability in, whether it's in social or inside of your email box. People are connected to you and feel a connection to you based on who you are and how you show up in the world before more so when it comes to, you know, buying your products or services. So if you're trying to connect with people in the social space and they don't know you or have a know, like, and trust factor with you already, and they don't know the value proposition that you bring to them, if you can make them laugh or cry, you got them. That's why Shalene does a lot of funny stuff, because she just brings her personality to the table. And I think that's something I would encourage you to do even in your emails. Yes, right? So I have followed Shalene for 15 years and probably own everything she has ever offered. So know, like, and trust is huge. Yes, it is. Yeah. She is a sweetheart. You know, she's, just so relatable, you know, that I think that's the key. And I say that, I use that word a lot. You know, it's one of those things where, when you feel like you can connect to somebody and they're just, you know, whether you say, well, they're just like me, or I could sit down and have a coffee with that person and just feel like we had known them forever. That is what you're looking for. And you can build that remotely. I mean, I could probably, if I was to put out an email about myself or Shalene or anybody that is really doing this well, people would feel like they know that person. Then they would tell you that they feel like they know that person. I have met people in person that relate things that happened 6 months ago in my life. And I'm like, how do they know that? It's because I shared it. You know, but you don't, once it's happened in your life, you kind of put it to the side and, but then, you know, people pay attention to those things in social and they remember them. So it's just a really interesting dynamic that, yes, you can build those deeper relationships and that deeper connection by just being relatable. All right. Any last minute questions before I turn you guys loose to go put your plan together? So, Vicki, okay, this is even funnier. So when magnetic lashes first came out, I was like, that has got to be the bomb diggity. I mean, like, then I wouldn't have to worry about glue and all that other stuff. Yeah, girl, I can't put them together. Now, my understanding now is you can get this thing that you know, I guess it's like an eyeliner and you just paint it on and then it snaps to it. It's got some magnetic properties, but I haven't used them. I'm still using the lashes that Shalene recommended with the glue she recommended. So Marvez says, I did and they were awful. Yeah, I had a, here for all the guys that are here, y'all are like, why are we talking eyelashes? But see, that's the point. That is so the point. We can connect and relate on that. Maybe not the guys, but us women can relate to that. So it's a connection point. So think about that too. What are your connection points? What do you really like, the things that you could share that are, sometimes they're our deepest stories and sometimes they're our most, what I would call most arguably, or what I call daily stories, because during the course of a day, we all have stories. Like, you know, I like this morning, for example, I mean, too much information, but obviously we have a new puppy and new puppy hasn't figured out that he needs to go to the bathroom outside. So yeah, almost. Okay. I know this is, like I said, too much information. So I'm just walking along this morning and my feet almost went out from under me because somebody who will remain nameless had decided they were going to tinkle on the floor. And yeah, now how many of you guys can relate to that? Do you think that's hilarious that I almost fell on my tush and busted my butt? Or have you ever had dogs that have done something similar? Have you all had that happen to you? How many times have we stepped in our puppy's poo somewhere along the line? Point of it is, we can all relate to that in most cases. And it's a funny story. Thankfully, I didn't fall and bust my butt. That's the important part. So think about the things that happen on a daily basis, tie them in, share them. You know, one of the things, you know, and again, everybody thinks that they don't have stuff to share, but we all have things that happen to us each and every day that others will find relatable. And, you know, how do you tie it into your business? Sometimes there is no connection. You know, one would argue that, like, you know, I'll use Shalene again. You know, she shares, you know, her life. She's very open with her, you know, everything. Somebody asked her about how, you know, her lashes. So she did a tutorial on, you know, how she does her lashes. I've seen her do a lot of things, like, you know, how she does her messy bun and all kinds of things. You know, when people ask you, personal things, if you feel comfortable sharing them, open up, share it. Yes, I did see that, Vicki. The 40, you know, basically the 40 Mythbusters. I mean, Mythbusters about women over 40. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I will, just being totally transparent, that I haven't done as well as I should. You know, when I'm live like this with y'all, I'm totally cool with it. Like, I have no problems sharing literally, you know, most things. But I don't plan it. You know, usually it just comes out. And I need to be more intentional with my planning, is my point, with the relatable stuff. All right. Well, guys and gals, I'm so excited for you. I'm serious. Go check out the relationship, I call it the weekly relationship building planner, email broadcast planner. Check it out. Circle the ones that resonate with you. Like I could write about that. And then transplant them into your real plan. And then come up with things, you know, fill in the holes from there, I guess. But the point of it is, get a year's worth of prompts ready. And if I'm going to challenge you to spend a block of time and maybe write out the first four emails so that you can get that in the hopper, you know, schedule them, get them done, and then set a date and a time for next month to do the same thing. Oh girl, I'm not sure about the bikini. I'm not sure. That might be pushing my boundaries just a little bit much. I'm more of a one piece suit girl. Oh goodness. Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. But well, hopefully this has been helpful. Just go start the process so that you can get a plan in place. It's going to make all the difference in the world. All right, guys, have a great rest of your Saturday. Take care, stay safe, and I will see you in the group, and then we'll meet again on Monday to talk about promotional emails, okay? All right, take care, goodbye.